Hans and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. It is your Ute preview show as we are deep into Utah County as we get you ready for Utah football as they get set to take on Oregon State, who just may have wrecked any opportunity for the Pac-12 to get into the New Year's Six. I mean, not New Year's Six, the college football playoff. They'll be in the New Year's Six. But Oregon State doing all kinds of damage to Oregon. We'll talk about that game coming up in a bit, but we need to recap Utah and a disappointing loss to Washington, leading 21-0 and then losing that game.
Mm-hmm.
Frank.
Well, it's not like that doesn't happen regularly. I mean, that, you know,
Washington doesn't.
That stuff
do that
happens
very
all the time in college football.
Never in that stadium. That was the first time in that stadium. Yeah. Yeah, that's 21-0 is a pretty good lead at half.
Well, I think the there were lots of issues in that game, and I keep going back to, I still think that this little bit of youth and inexperience is hard to overcome in that situation. So that was part of it. The inability for Utah to really generate threatening passing game in the second half and target the guys that were productive in the first half. I thought that was a little bit of an issue as well. The not figuring out a way to cover up Cade Otton during that game certainly turned out to be an issue. And the way Utah lost the line of scrimmage in the second half, maybe that's the biggest issue is, and maybe, Hans, you'll talk about that a little bit more, and I know you have talked about it, but it felt like in the first half of play, this is what Utah football could look like this year. You know, dominant at the line of scrimmage, excellent run game, play, you know, passing game that worked off of that, and a quarterback who could make plays with his arm and kept drives alive with some athleticism using his legs. And that all seemed to disappear in the second half. And I'm just curious if you think, or if I'm alone in that, that it really did start up front. Mm-hmm. Utah couldn't create a real push on the quarterback, especially in the second half, and they didn't get a push on the offensive side in the second half either.
It was weird to watch the protection completely collapse in the second half of this game. And it was also frustrating. Now, remember, Frank, in the pregame, we talked about how number 58, the defensive end or the linebacker for Washington, his first name is Zion. We talked about how this guy could influence the game. We talked about them putting in an offensive game plan to chip him and double team him and to take care of him. And we watched him in the second half single-handedly rip down the quarterback three times, forced a fumble. It had so many big plays and big moments, had another sack taken away from him. And you go back and you look at that offensive line and you just scratch your head and think, what happened here? You know, I posted the video where you had your left guard and your left tackle came out in just a solid double team effort, and he split them before they could even really get set. So I think that this Utah offensive line needs to be challenged right now. They need to be challenged. This offensive line needs to play better. Both these games, they have played poorly. And that's not okay to say for a position group that we thought was going to be more of a lead group.
Well, I think a lot of us felt like that offensive line was going to be the foundation of the offense. Like that,
yes.
We had a lot of guys coming back, breaking in a new quarterback, breaking in a new run game. You have some question marks at your receiver group, really solid at the tight end. I think to a lot of us, the key to Utah's offensive success this year was based mostly in the fact that they had a largely returning offensive line. And then to see those guys kind of take a step backwards in that second half was difficult. I think we got, you know, for Utah fans, you get your hopes up in the first half, like this is the way it's supposed to look. And in the second half, it was, you know, all the pieces, the cards fell apart.
Another one of the main frustrations, Scotty, that I would take to Andy Ludwig, that would then flow downhill, as all things do. It would flow downhill to Jake Bentley, and then that would flow downhill to the offensive line, is not getting the ball to the superstars. I'm done with it. Like, if you can't get to the ball to the superstars, then find me somebody that can. A coordinator that'll work it up.
Who are your top two or three weapons on this team?
It's Brian Thompson, Brant Keithy, and Ty Jordan. Those three.
That's it right there. Those three.
Those three. And you had, what was that, a total of six touches between the top two? It's those three, and you've got to have 18 to 20 combined touches between the first two that I mentioned, and Ty Jordan needs to be at that 15 to 20 carry mark or touch mark.
Well, Ty Jordan is probably – I think moving forward, he's going to be the guy. And I probably took – this is not unexpected.
I don't know. Like, he had 10 carries for 97 yards, just a 9.7-yard average. You think he deserves more?
It was pretty good.
I mean, I know he had the fumble, but I don't care. I mean, this kid is going to be special.
It's not like he ran around the corner and dropped the ball. Someone put a helmet right on it.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a difficult situation for him. But that's not unexpected to me, the way that the running back position is unfolding, because we had the sense that it was going to be Wilmore Brumfield. Mm-hmm. Coming into the season.
Yeah, very much.
And so I think and we even talked about that. Like, it could be a couple games in before Utah settles on a back. Well, now we're a couple games, and I think one guy has separated himself enough to garner most of the carries. Utah carried the football in that game 42 times. Now, we're counting in that 10 for Jake Bentley. So let's take that away. 32 carries in that game still. With your running backs, that's where you want to be in that range. I think that's how the Utah offense works. So you get 20 of those to Ty Jordan, and maybe you're significantly better. Still, 215 yards on the ground. I look over at the other the other part of it in the passing game, and just 144 yards through the air, 16 of 23 for Bentley. Plus a couple interceptions. That is the piece that needs to improve. And part of it is on Bentley. Although maybe we disagree on this. I think Bentley has the tools. I think he has all of the capability to run the offense.
I mean, from like a talent skill set or?
Yeah, talent skill set.
Okay.
Yeah, athleticism, all of those things. I think he has all of the tools.
Arm strength?
I think he has the arm strength, yeah. I've never been, like, especially in college.
I was going to say, in college.
In the NFL, it's a different story. But in college, Ty Detmer, if he could throw a 12-yard out, without taking two check steps to get,
remember Major Applewhite at Texas?
Yeah, I mean, but there are other ways you could do it. Even in the NFL, when you have a guy like Peyton Manning, by the end of his career, I mean, he couldn't. It was difficult for him to throw the ball. It looked like 15 yards downfield, but he knew where he wanted to go with the ball. In college, I don't think you need, to have the rifle arm and throw it 75 yards downfield. I think you have to have a little understanding of where you want to put the ball and who's going to be open and all of those things. And I think that Bentley has all of the physical tools available. And he's even shown the ability to run the ball, which I don't know that we really expected out of him. So I'm not sure that's really an issue. But I think what Coach Whittingham said after the game was very telling. The statement about it's not about the plays, it's about getting the ball to your playmakers. And if you look across the statistics, Brian Thompson has three catches for 65 yards. Brant Keithy has four catches for 23 yards. Cade Otten, on the other side, has eight catches for 108 yards. Puka Nacua has six catches for 67 yards. The lack of either targets or productivity out of Brian Thompson and Brant Keithy is, I think that's the biggest concern about the offense right now, based on what happened in the second half against Washington.
And it's difficult because you look at Brant Keithy and Brian Thompson, and I would put them up against Nacua and Otten.
Oh, I think they're very similar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very similar.
Yep.
So, but the issue to me seemed like there was a concerted effort for Washington to get the ball to Otten. He's a matchup nightmare. Utah didn't match up with him very well. I like Sewell. I like Richie. But Otten seemed to win that battle with consistency.
It feels like there's a few forces that are keeping Utah away from those targets. And I do think that when you're seeing that few targets and you're seeing them make a mistake this big, not getting the ball to these playmakers, you got to look at everything and say probably everything has a little bit of influence. Offensive line unable to really hold protection.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterback that might not understand exactly what his reads are or how to get him to the targets. An offensive coordinator that might be working on run games and not really focusing on other areas in the passing game, or isn't illustrating or is not exacting his information to the quarterback the right way. And all those things could play a role in this failure. I look at it as a major failure through the first two games. I do think it changes against Oregon State. I think we will see a total of 16 touches between Keithy and Thompson.
Oh,
after this, or 16 plus touches.
I think it's the shot has been,
well, in Washington it was
bow,
17
across the bow.
Four catches for Keithy, 3 for Thompson, 10 carries for Ty Jordan.
Okay, 17 with those three, and I'm saying oh. two between those two.
Oh, okay,
Brian
gotcha.
Thompson and Keithy.
Okay, Keithy, yeah. So that was 7 total.
That was 7 total, right?
Yep.
And I'm expecting 16. Minimum in those touches in those two.
Between yeah. those two guys.
Yes.
The one issue I would say with Jake Bentley, because like I said, I think he has all the tools. I think he's capable. No, I don't think there's any question he's capable. The one thing I would say is, and it's hard to tell because we don't get a full view of the field all the time with the TV, it is that he is holding on to the ball for a long time in the pocket. It seems like a little bit – he needs to have a little bit more of a sense of urgency in getting through his progressions and getting the ball out of his hand. And that would, you know, that would probably help his offensive line a little bit, probably help the passing game a little bit, even if he just finds himself getting rid of the ball, throwing it out of bounds, throwing something incomplete – and then coming back and having an opportunity on the next down. But that is, I think that would be my only negative of where Bentley is right now.
Hans and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Take a quick break, come back, and we continue on. We're live here at Built Bar. All you need to do is go to builtbar.com, use the keyword zone, and you get 26% off your initial offer right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
This is DJ and PK.
Are you surprised with the number of turnovers?
I'm disgusted with it. Not surprised, disgusted. We have to do a much better job of taking care of the football.
There's Andy Ludwig, Utah offensive coordinator. Disgusted with the turnovers. 9 of them in 2 games, even if you write off the Hail Mary against USC, or even the late pick at Washington, that's still 7. If you average 3.5, 4, 4.5 turnovers a game, you are going to have a long season, even if it's a short season.
Oh, man, you're philosophically poetic there.
Thank you.
That was
you
deep. Much. They're old. Always an issue. I understand that Ludwig would be disgusted. It's probably the best word that he could use under the circumstances.
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 till 10 on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Hans and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. But more importantly, it's Frank Dolce. It's your Ute preview show, counting you down to kickoff with Utah taking on Oregon State.
Do you think it's odd? Do you think that it's odd that Tom Homo decided to schedule his press conference at the exact same time as the Utah preview show? Do you think that's there's something about that?
You think he wanted to take a half hour?
He stole
away
a half an hour from the Utah preview show.
It was his intent. He knew what was going on.
Or do you think it was Lavelle Edwards from on high messing with the Utah preview show?
Might have been that too. I don't know.
Well, apparently he's been responsible for a lot of things these days. So
hey, I do know this. There's nothing like BYU getting to make an announcement and Utah releasing an announcement soon after it or just before, or vice versa.
When they announced that they were playing Michigan in the middle of BYU Media Day.
What? That's just when the announcement came out.
That was one of the all-time great moments of this rivalry.
It's happened so many times. I know it's really is back and forth. I mean, they do it to each other, but there was a span there where Utah was getting a lot of ribbon in, man. BYU would be in the middle of some great moment in Utah would be like, oh, by the way, we'll be in the big house against Jim Harbaugh on opening day.
Jim Harbaugh's opening game. Yeah. Oh, and it's a home.
Just added another extension to Kyle Whittingham.
It's a home and home, by the way. They're coming to Rice-Eccles Stadium.
Well, anyway, BYU has a lot of good things to talk about right now.
So I don't know if the moment of that presser was directly related to
you don't
wanting to bite a half hour out of you.
Are you sure?
I think it was more not just against Utah. I think it was against Frank Dolce.
I think
it was personal.
Coach Homo is a regular listener, so I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he had it in the back of his mind.
Is that a tough game to get over? Dropping that 21-0 lead. I mean, does that have a hangover effect at all?
Not this year. I mean, I immediately after the game, I labeled the year a rebuilding year. So that was helpful for me.
I mean, I called it earlier in the week an extended spring game or a spring ball.
Yeah, and Utah's going to get, what, four or five games in this year? I guess we'd be looking at it differently if Utah were sitting here at 4-0 right now or 2-0 right now, having won a few games and playing pretty well with all the youth and inexperience. Then we'd be saying things like, what an amazing coaching job and – what athleticism and what a recruiting effort by this team. But the reality is it is a young and inexperienced team, and they have had to deal with nonsense about missing two games early on and then trying to catch up. By the way, Arizona State only has one game, has only played one game.
Yeah.
I just, for some reason, that didn't register. I was looking over the schedule today. They're one game in, 0-1. That's crazy. So all of those things combined, I would call this a rebuilding year for Utah and an opportunity to get a lot of experience for a really young and athletic football team. And I think this experience, Hans, was really meaningful for Utah. To go in at halftime with a 21-0 lead on the road against a very difficult historically a difficult opponent, and then to relax. I think that's what happened. Like, you don't realize what a grind it is to play through four quarters. I think that's the learning experience for this football team, as a bunch of freshmen went out and discovered that there was a second half to play, and they weren't ready to play that football game.
Let's talk about some of those freshmen. You had DB Fabian Marks, who had a really nice interception. And you had a freshman linebacker, Sione Fotu, who had he stretched out a play, had a nice tackle. You had Clark Phillips, who had a couple of breakups, including one that was in the end zone. I know Jatravis Broughton is just a sophomore, but Jatravis Broughton had a really good first half, made some really big plays. We mentioned Ty Jordan on the offensive side of the ball, and you know there are other offensive, there are other freshman players on the offensive side of the ball. Give me give me your thoughts just on the athleticism and what you're seeing from the youth in the rebuild.
I think that's what you would say, is there that there's plenty of athleticism. I like Phillips. I think he's shown himself pretty well. I mean, all of these guys have taken their lumps in these first two games, but they've also shown signs of being, you know, potentially really, really productive players for Utah. Nate Ritchie included. He got on the wrong side of Auten a couple times. I really like Sewell. I really like Nephi Sewell. He was matched up on Auten, and that's a bad matchup. He got on the wrong side of it, but he also was on the right side of it a couple times. So, and these are, you know, these are all outside of Sewell, who's a junior. Ritchie is a freshman. Phillips is a freshman. Broughton is a sophomore. Marks is a freshman. That's your defensive secondary.
Yeah.
Nickelback is a sophomore as well. Pretty good leadership up front. This is what I was hoping would occur and didn't necessarily occur, or hasn't as much, is that Utah would be able to rely on a junior senior laden defensive front four to control the line of scrimmage, to pressure the quarterback enough to take some pressure off of the defensive secondary, and that didn't occur second half in against Washington. Utah couldn't rush four and get to the quarterback. If they wanted to pressure the quarterback, it felt like they had to bring somebody else, an extra guy. And so the perfect storm, a lack of controlling the line of scrimmage with your front four, and that's the most depth and experience you have on your team. So they're not able to get it done with just four, and then it just compounds moving back through the defense. Now the opposing quarterback has more time. Now you're asking your defensive secondary to hold on to guys longer. It's a bad combination, and I think that's where Washington really showed and shined through, and that's why they had almost 272 yards passing in that football game, and that seemed to be the difference.
We got to go to break here. We're running a little bit late, but hold that thought. We'll get to more of what to expect in this game coming up next hour as we're just getting started with Frank Dolce. It's your Ute preview show right here on the Zone Sports Network. Brenna's hanging out with us once again as we're live here at Built Bar. Frank's tried the white chocolate cookies and cream. I would say next up, what would you suggest for his next bar?
Oh, that depends. Are you like a fruit lover or like a creamy chocolate lover? I love these because there's 9 flavors with nuts and then 9 without nuts. So you can kind of really go with what you're feeling for that day or what your mood has.
Yeah, I have a bad sweet tooth.
Me too.
I have a terrible sweet tooth.
I will tell you, Scotty's favorite is the raspberry.
Yeah.
Actually, I take that back. My new favorite is that coconut with almond.
Ooh.
That you gave me yesterday.
Yeah, oh, the okay. Almond Joy.
You I like mean, that. It is okay. Just like an Almond Joy. That crunch on there puts it over the top.
Okay, yeah. So.
But I also love peanut butter.
Okay, peanut butter is my favorite.
Mine's it's the cherry Barcia.
The cherry Barcia is really good, too.
It's got real pieces of cherry in it.
So you know it's good.
You know it's good. Works 60% of the time.
It works every time. It's a real cherry.
It does.
So you know it's good.
What's funny is Scotty, Brenna, Scotty and I are looking at Frank with these wide eyes like, so what's your favorite? What do you like?
Try this one.
Because we all love them so much.
Because we all have tried them all.
So you like the straight peanut butter.
Yeah, and it has bits of peanuts in it. I'll put my plug in for the peanut butter.
Okay. I also, I have 4 or 5 over here. The mint brownie was suggested to me. So I don't know how you guys feel about that, but that one sounded really good. Peanut butter, toffee almond sounds fantastic, and caramel brownie. Wow. And how about this? Lemon almond cheesecake.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't tried that one.
I know.
Is that a good one?
It's good, yeah. If you like lemon, you'll like that one.
I do love lemon. So I'm really looking forward to. Is there a recommended dosage?
I know.
Like if I eat 6 bars and one at once, is that too many or is that?
The most I tapped out at 8 in a day.
Oh my god, Brent, I gotta tell you, yesterday
we were in studio and I was leaving the studio and I looked down at the garbage can that was right by and there was like four Raptors
in
there.
So good. Yes. I need my protein though, Brenna. Yeah. Like,
You'll get your protein. It'll sneak in there because you think you're eating a treat and then, oh, there's your 17 grams.
They are so delicious and they really are filling. You know, you eat that bar, Frank, and you're getting those 17 grams of protein and it's going to sit there for a few hours.
Yeah. But then your sweet tooth is going to be calling like, hey, I want more.
Yeah. 130 calories, which is very reasonable.
4 or 5 net carbs, depending on what flavor you get.
17 grams of protein, 100% taste.
100% taste. There's no question. There's a lot of taste in that.
Yeah. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use the keyword zone. It's a great protein bar. It's a great meal replacement. It's a great snack. I mean, it fits all these different labels. Go to BuiltBar.com, promo code zone, and you can take up to 26% off your first order. It's all right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone.